Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the Cheeky Natives. This is so exciting. We're recording at our favorite location, Bridge Books Maboneng.
Shout out.
Yes. Hey, that's our live audience. And we've got the brilliant, phenomenal black girl magic that is Nozizwe Jele, who was the author and is still the author of Happiness is a Four-Letter Word, which is everybody's favorite movie.
Which has won numerous awards, including the 2011 Commonwealth Prize, Writers' Prize in the Best First Book category.
Come Shout on, out. Somebody.
And the 2011 Mnet Literary Award in the Film category. And then we all know that there was a film adaptation that was released at box office countrywide in February 2016. And Nozizwe also writes short stories. She supports various initiatives to promote reading among young people, including the Funza Literary Trust.
And she's here to discuss her novel, The Ones with Purpose.
I just want to say, before we say hello to Nozi, like, literally, The Ones with Purpose is the best novel I've read in 2018.
Yeah, definitely. Like, this book put me through some things, and, yo, even when I went to revisit it again, I was just like, I have so many things I need to ask Nozi, because this book just has so much weight and carries, right? You just read like the first line, and you know when you read the first line and you know it's going down, and you know you need to sit down and prepare yourself. And that's really what The Ones with Purpose was for us. It was one of our favorite books, and I think we make everybody read this book. We tell everyone to read this book.
So how are you doing, Nozi, on this wonderful sunny Saturday afternoon?
I'm actually good, thank you, and I'm not cold. Last time I was here, I was breathing, so I was nervous when you said Bridge Books Maboneng. Like when you said Commissioner Street, I was like, okay, great. And then I was like, Maboneng, I was like, oh God. But today is great, so I'm good. Thank you for the invite.
No, I mean, we've wanted to have you on this podcast for a long time.
I think we've been stalking you for so long. Yes. Like, I'm sure now you see us at events and like, not these two.
And I'm glad you reminded me, because we spoke about it a while back.
Yeah, we did.
Kind of forgot.
But I think we're not the only ones that wants a piece of you, right? Yeah. Everybody wants a piece of you, and how's that going?
Well, I mean, you went to the Open Book Fair earlier in September, and how was that experience for you?
So I love Open Book. I went there the first time they had it in 2012, and I thought it was phenomenal, because it's a complete book fair. It's how you think it to be, and it is. That is exactly that. The panels are exciting, the speakers that they have, the whole arrangement, the logistics of it, because sometimes the logistics can be a nightmare, these big festivals, or things are like too far apart, but the way they've contained it. And it was just like, it was great to go back again. So you don't really get invited unless you write. So I haven't written in 8 years, so I hadn't had an invite.
In 8 years until you wrote again.
No, because it's so popular and we all want to be there. Like, and they're very, very selective in terms of who they bring into the open book. So I was excited to go back again.
Which is an interesting thing that you said, that you hadn't written in ages. Why was there such a big gap between your first novel and your second novel? I feel like these were Sade vibes. You know how Sade gives us one album every 10 years? This was a little something. Because I'm like, okay, I remember reading Happiness is a Four-Letter Word. I'm like, you know, there's a new book coming out, I'm sure, you know, she's seen how much we all love this book. And then Dololo book.
Dololo
book. 8 years.
It happens, it's called the writer's block. It's real, it happened. Number of things. One of them was I was so overwhelmed by the success of Happiness that I struggled to get started. I mean, I had started The Ones with Purpose as far back as 2011. But I just struggled to move it forward. And then the movie didn't help. Right? So it just was like on top of the book had done so well on its own, and then you have the movie, and it just, so that was one thing. And so I was nervous that, am I going to live up to the success of Happiness? And the other thing that made me nervous was because I knew I wanted to write a book that's different to Happiness. And I felt Tukuthi, you know, the readers are wanting Happiness too. And I didn't want to give them Happiness too, because I was was not there at that time. I wanted to give them something different. So all of that just added to my inability to move the book forward. But then once I, because you get to a point where readers are like, we want you, we want you, we just want to read you, and you reconcile with that, then I started writing. But because of the many themes in the books, I just ended up overwriting. So at some point, this book was like twice its size.
And then you had to,
and
you know,
it was like, okay,
an editing process.
It was like, okay, girl, cut, and then you cut, and then just say what you want to say and get on with it. And then I had to like cut half of it and then start again, just building a little bit. Yeah. So it was a combination of things, but I think also because of the delicateness of some of the themes, I wanted to give it that sensitivity, and I didn't want to over sensationalize things and make people over emotional, because you can play with words. It's easy to play with words, right? But I just wanted it to be just right.
And I mean, before we start getting into the book, right? I really would like you to read just.
Sure.
The start of the book, because I think for me, like, if I were to walk into the room and not know that you are Cynthia Nozizwe Jelo, who wrote Happiness is a Four-Letter Word, and I read this part, I would just grab this book and be like, I don't know what's happening here, but I want to read this.
Also, as an aside, she said she didn't want to make everyone feel over emotional, right?
Yeah.
But no one can read this book
and not feel emotional.
Not feel, so, I mean, if this is you having toned down, you see. What were you going to do to the previous
No,
version?
Because you can draw out things, right?
Yeah.
I could have drawn out so many things. And somebody said I address like really heavy things, like with almost like a stroke of a brush.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's
mm-hmm.
so light, like
mm-hmm.
depression. It's there. You know you see it, but it's not overly expanded on. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's what I mean. I could have written just that part about Ma and her depression in a much more. But I wasn't there. Right?
Yeah.
I wasn't there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So should I read?
Yes, please.
Okay. I did say that I'm a terrible reader. but okay, fine. Has everybody read the book? Or everybody knows about the book, though. Okay, maybe we should just give them the copies so that when I'm reading, they can be reading as well.
Okay, so sure.
It's just
we stand an inclusive queen.
Yes.
Listen, you have to include your people. All right. Okay. Cool. So it's page 9. Oh, it's just the blurb. I imagined a dying person's last breath as something resembling an exclamation mark, distinct and hanging mid-air like an interrupted thought. My older sister Figile's last breath before she dies is nothing of the sort. There is no rattling noise at the back of her throat, no relentless twitching, no clinging to life. Figile dies with no more fuss than a switch of a light bulb. No, I get goosebumps now.
That's the thing, right? That's the thing. The thing is, like, I remember when I read this bit, I was like, and like an interrupted thought. There is no rattling noise at the back of her throat. I was like, I need to know why there's no rattling noise at the back of Fikile's throat. Right, already I know Fikile's gonna die, but I want to know what leads to her death, what's happening. Like,
who is she?
Yeah. So I'm ready for that. And then I'm like, no, you know what? I deserve to read this book. And Alma read the book first, because when the book came out, I was still
in the
States, right?
Yes.
So Alma read the book first, and then she messages me. She's like, look, you need to come home. You need to get this book. So that we can read it, right? And I go to the launch, the first launch that was in Joburg was when I came back and I went to that one. And I was like, I need to read this book. Like, there's no way I can't read this book. And then I read the book. And I will admit I cried. Mm. I literally, there was a part that, so I lost my mom last year, so there was a part that really resonated with me, and I had to take a moment and like stop the book and deal with the emotions before I returned to it.
Yeah.
But I also felt that it was one of the first stories that I read about death, about black families, about funeral, and about all these other things.
Mm.
And it felt real. Mm-hmm. Like I felt that, I feel that your writing, and why I think that this is one of the best novels that I've read this year, mm-hmm. is that like there is like this materiality to your words.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually feeling them as I'm reading them.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed, they invoke these emotions. I feel like I am the characters in this book and I know them.
Mm-hmm.
But on the one hand, I'm like, I do know them, you know,
because
these are these people, yeah.
But it's also the investment, yeah. right? I knew, yeah. I was actually saying this to someone the other day, that I think, because of what I do, I've become, I'm not desensitized, but I think that we treat death in a very different manner to how everybody else treats death, right?
Yeah.
Because you see it all the time and you're not,
yeah.
you can't always become emotionally attached to it, you know?
Yeah.
So you have to have healthy ways to detach yourself from those situations. But I often think about my patients and I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, you see the mother come in and you're like, oh, this is this person's mother, like,
yeah.
this is the mother, this is the daughter, this is the sister, oh my goodness, like, this person had a whole family attached to them outside of what you see in the hospital. And it's we think of people's disease, it's a terrible thing, but people just think of people as their diseases, you know, but you never think of the idea behind it. And also because for black people it's very taboo to discuss certain things, so we don't discuss dying, right? Like, you can see that the person is on their way out, but it's not a conversation that you have. It's what would you like us to do at your funeral, you know, how would you like us to have the proceedings. And for me, this book was just, I was sitting there, I'm like, oh my goodness, this is what it means for people to write about us in ways that are respectful and true to us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're not writing for a white gaze. So you're writing about all of the drama that happens, because black funerals plus drama equals the story of our lives. You're writing about all the drama that happens at black funerals, but you're not writing it in a way that seems like you're writing it so that Mrs. van der Merwe can understand what happens when Sipho Kazi has gone home for another funeral. Oh, these blacks. You know, you're writing it in ways that are truthful, because we were all sitting there like, yeah, there's always that uncle, there's always that aunt, there's always that relative. Owens are my whole, because they can't be peace.
So, the title of the book is obviously called The Ones With Purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And we know, like, on social media, like, you every now and then have to come back and be like, it's not a self-help book. It's not a self-help book. So I want to know, so on page 1118 you write, Reverend Madida speaks and they're returning from the funeral of a fellow church member. The reason they were not able to come earlier: stroke, so young, a policeman, a hall captain, a good one at that, not a sniff of corruption to his name. The ones with purpose are dying, he says. Who will be left to save this world?
Sure.
And so, is that where the title comes from? Like the, and why the ones with purpose?
We're taking a short break.
Are you a Caribbean American? Are you looking for a podcast that truly speaks to your culture and identity? Look no further than Carry On Friends, the ultimate destination for all things Caribbean American, hosted by me, Carrie Ann. Dive deep into topics such as culture, heritage, and everyday life through the unique lens of the Caribbean American experience. You'll walk away feeling more connected to your roots. Follow and listen on Apple Podcasts so you'll never miss an episode of Carry On Friends, the Caribbean American experience. Your Caribbean American community awaits.
Yes, so that's where the title comes from. And it look, I wrote that sentence, and after I'd written that sentence, I realized that there was something in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe if I just backtrack in terms of why this sentence, why this title and why that sentence was particularly important, because of the role that Figile has played in this family. So maybe just for those who haven't read it, so this book is about a family the Mabuza family. Figile is the oldest child, and she has just died. Like, first paragraph, she dies. And Anele, the middle sister, tells the story. And yeah, so it's told through Anele. They have a younger brother, Mbuso, and they have Ma, right? So it's really Anele remembering her sister and the role that she played in their lives. And so for Anele and for the context of this story, Figile is the one with purpose, and yes. Figile is the one who dies, right? But that doesn't mean that, you know, all the people that have a purpose, because somebody asked me this now, so are they dead or are we dying? So if you have a purpose, you're going to die. I'm like, no, I mean, it's just like in the context of the story, because also the way the reverend says the ones with purpose are dying is, as he has just read, he's coming from a funeral of another young person, right, who has just died, and a cop, and a good cop at that. And so just in writing this book, I think there were so many things that I was exploring. For me, one of them was illness and, and death amongst young people. Like, it just feels like we are dying young, right?
Or younger than our parents, the older generation.
Yeah. So we just go, like, you know, how many, I mean, in the last month, how many young
people
that you know of who have passed on, right? And we're getting sick, and for me that was actually one of the starting points. We're getting sick as young people. I mean, my mother at my age, she didn't have this kind of condition. She didn't suffer from stroke. She didn't have she didn't have cancer. She didn't have, like, you know, they were struggling a different battle. You know, their battle was different. I went through a phase where I have three of my friends who just near had death experiences. Young people, and a lot of it. So it made me question just what is it? What is going on with this age group? Are we overextending ourselves? Could our lifestyles be part of it? So that was one angle. The other angle was, of course, what does it mean for a family to lose a member, a significant member? I mean, everybody is important in every family, right? Yeah, I mean, but what happens?
Not the drunk uncle.
he's something to someone, yeah. Right? And he plays a role in the family. He's a puzzle. You know, you know, if you take him out, there's that space in that puzzle, that family puzzle. So he's there to play whatever role. Yeah. But what happened if this just big piece of the puzzle just goes missing? You know, and somebody was actually said. It's like a table has four chairs, and what happens if you pull the one leg?
It becomes unstable.
It either becomes unstable, or you have to, it becomes unstable and it either falls, or you have to immediately reinforce it. Yeah. So it was also exploring the role of Figile in this family, the role of a girl child, the role of an elderly, the firstborn girl child in particular in black families. So it's multi. I often struggle to answer that question, like, why did you write it? Because it's like, oh, then there was this idea, then there was that idea.
And they all came together.
But it's also interesting, right, that in the beginning of the book, I think you have your characters that you love, and you, this book is also just like bad things happening to good people, right? Figile dies, and I don't want to lie, I was really upset with you just on that first page. I'm like, Nozi, how can you let Figile die, though? But she
no, it's not a spoiler. It's like literally the first page. And
she even says, you start the book. Figile dead from
you start the book, and you know Figile is dead.
But it was just, I think that we form emotional attachments to certain people, like I was saying, that you form emotional attachments to certain characters. And I mean, geez, it's like Figile just can't catch a break. Figile is the quintessential black oldest child. I think that being a black female oldest child is completely different to being the oldest boy. The expectations are completely different because of the way that patriarchy and the way that our families are set up.
But I think also in...
But And also the difficult life that Fikile experiences. Mm. Fikile literally just cannot catch a break. She gets hardship at every single corner, yeah, right, of her life.
Yeah.
And even at the end, guys, Fikile doesn't just, you know, like, just die in her sleep. There's this whole long, drawn-out process of suffering and of suffering, pain. And I'm just, yeah, like, oh my God, is this a metaphor for black women's lives, right? Yeah. That we just, there can be no peace for black women's bodies. Because if you are not... If it's not that you're looking after your errant husband and your multiple children, then you have this crappy, yeah, employer, then you're like facing all of these illnesses because of like structural inequalities and the way our lives are set up, and like access to healthcare and just the aggression of the diseases that we do face. And like Fikile was that character. I was just like, yo, it's a metaphysical dilemma.
Yeah.
I mean, I think for me, I wanted to, you know, Fikile went through a lot, right?
Too much.
And the idea of like growing up in the family that she grew up in, yeah, and what happened to Uma, happening to Uma, and Fikile having to be like, I have younger people that I need to take care of, and this is the things that I need to do in order to take care of them, right?
Mm.
So, Nozi, I suppose the question is, why did you decide to write Fikile in the way that you wrote Fikile, right? Well, Fikile could have easily have just been like one of those people who didn't care about her family and died and now there's a funeral.
Yeah.
But you wrote her in such a way that like throughout the weaving of the story, we are constantly referred back to the memory of Fikile and how she's touched each person in the family.
So Fikile was such a central theme for me because as I was writing this story, there was this person. I mean, Fikile's life is a life that is experienced by a lot of people, right? And people who don't, and because maybe with happiness, maybe it was also a contrast with happiness. Happiness, they've gotten out. They have their own self. Some of the issues that they're dealing with are self-imposed. You know, like it's just that luxury of just having midlife issues, happiness,
personal problems.
And then exactly. So in modeling Fikile, so I knew I wanted to write a different world to happiness, but a world that is so common as well, and that is experienced by a whole lot of people. And I knew happiness was aspirational. Happiness, even when I was writing happiness, I was like, no, it's not all about violence, it's not all about poverty. We actually have these real life issues about, I want a townhouse in Sentin, I actually want that promotion, I want this car, I want that, and it's issues that we are experiencing as this group of people at that particular time.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to write a different story because we are people, we are, you know, multidimensional,
yes,
and our lives are different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why then Fikile became this person. It's the person who did not get away, did not leave. And what does that
mean? She stayed.
She stayed.
Yes.
And there's so many people who stay. And I guess with this book, I was very much interested in those who stayed. Like, what could have been different, you know, for Fikile? Could she have just abandoned the family at that time when she had that small chance? But what does that? What was that? When you're 16 and you're just thrown into this, do you even have a chance?
Yeah.
You know.
And I think a central theme is also the idea that black women particularly, right, because of circumstance, always have dreams deferred, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're always the ones getting, because the contrast then is, Mbuso is such a contrasting character, and he's somebody I really struggled with Mbuso, hey? Struggled with Mbuso, and I think a lot of us struggle with Mbuso, because as flawed as Fikile is, it's difficult not to like Fikile and not to empathize with Fikile.
Yeah.
But you wrote Mbuso in such a contrasting way. Mbuso gets to leave his family. Guys, Mbuso flourishes. Like, he leaves his family and he almost divorces himself. You know that I don't want to be related to these people because they just don't fit in with the idea of what I think my life should be
and therefore my relatives are a little bit embarrassing, so I'm not going to over invest myself in them. And Muso gets to do that,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And why did you write Muso's character in the way that you did? Because he's not a particularly likable person.
Well, because first of all, Muso is a boy, Muso is a guy, and men do get away with such things. Mm-hmm. And I always go back to this example with my brother. Like, my brother gets away with so much. My brother is like at arm's length. He decides what he wants to be involved in. Mm. Like, he's not automatically included in anything because that's just how he has chosen for it to happen, right? Mm. No, he doesn't say that I don't want to be involved, but you just like exclude him because of just the way things have happened in the past. But Mbuso is a man, so he has been able to do that, and he does, you know, get away from everything. And secondly, there's also the thing about Mbuso being the last born. You know, when you have two older sisters who are just there for everything, there for you, whether you recognize that or not, but I think it's easy also for last borns to just disappear and go and do their own things and have that voice.
Because they don't need to take care of anyone.
Because
there's no expectation.
Right.
And yes, because especially if you have the two stronger siblings, you know, then you can just like you pretty much can just get away with you just like disappear.
Even though he had the most resources invested in him. Muso got to go to university.
Yeah.
His sisters had to defer their dreams of going to university.
Yeah.
He got to go to university. Yeah. He was undoubtedly making more money than anybody else. He rose up in that car and they're all just like you.
But also you must recognize that also Muso had issues.
Yes.
Muso didn't know love. Unlike the two girls who obviously had to sacrifice a lot of things, but they knew love, and that was one thing that they held on to.
Mm-hmm.
That love that they had grown up when
everything was still fine.
When everything was still fine and
Ubaba
was still alive. And and for me, I didn't go too much into that, and perhaps really that was one of my only regrets with the book, just the love that Ubaba had for Uma, that the love that couple had for each other, right? And so Anele and Ufikile grow up in this family, in this loving environment, and all they know is love, and all they know is encouragement, because Ubaba is actually progressive in his thinking. So that so Umbuso missed that, because Ubaba leaves the family when he's just five, when he's just getting to know Baba, and then it's gone, and then Umama is not there for him.
I mean, my favorite character in the book is Anele. Like, I am rooting for Anele all the way, right? I'm like, oh, Anele, because Anele, we don't talk about like how Anele has also endured a lot, right?
Yeah.
So Anele is the one who needs to basically glue and keep the family together, right?
Yeah.
There's a period when Fikile has left the household and Anele has to pick up the pieces, right?
Yeah.
And Anele has to deal with Uma and Umbuso.
Yeah.
Like, Anele also has gone through like a whole lot, right? And I'm like, can Anele catch a break, right?
Mm.
Because like throughout the book, Anele is not catching a break. Hai se o ki o. Hai se o ki o. And then, who? Like, Nozi, I don't want to lie to you. Sizwe, if I meet him in the street, I will stab him.
Because you loved him in the beginning.
I don't know if I loved him, right? But I think I loved the fact that there was someone who showed up for Anele, because Anele didn't have a lot of people show up for her.
Yeah.
And then Sizwe shows up for Anele. Kanti, Sizwe lena utlaka a baggage. But I think that is the social commentary that you're trying to make, right? That also Sizwe's appearance in Anele's life was also dubious, right? But you know, sometimes we just like, life in Mandy, we can do this, whatever.
Yeah.
And then, for me, I think that was it. Like, when it happened, I was like,
I knew it.
That's why he was just a little shaky.
Mm. Okay. You're one of the very few people who picked that up, because a lot of people were just in love with
him.
Yes. No. Like, Susie always felt like he was compensating for something, like, but you just...
you just couldn't put your finger on what exactly it was, right? Because even the living circumstances are a little bit strange. Like, particularly for black people, you know, that that doesn't really happen. I can't imagine my boyfriend, my mom, and I living together, Jane. It's all good, you know, he and I sharing the bedroom. I mean, especially my religious mother, you know, my mom would just be like, Aibo, you know, so you... And that he was very comfortable with certain things. And Sizwe is just so patient. And he's not to say that he couldn't be all of those things, but it always felt like there was a penny waiting to drop because he always felt like he was compensating. Like, you know, Sizwe Jane Dabayaka, he goes straight. So we're not quite sure who comes up. He just appears. Who just, because, and I think Toni, is it Toni Morrison who says that she gets worried when somebody appears with Alice Walker, when someone appears with no baggage, because where did you dump your baggage Where did you dump your baggage at that you just come 30 plus years of living? I don't know how much you just saunter in.
That's Sizwe. That was Sizwe. And because the family was so vulnerable.
Yes.
And he just like made life happy for them. He made living meaningful. He is a fixer, right? And Ma just with Mbuso gone, and Sizwe just coming in to close that gap. Ma for a long time forgot that Mbuso was not there. Ma recovered, you know, and so Sizwe knew. It's almost like he knew the role that he had to play in the family. But obviously, all of the lies and everything come. You know, they will catch up with you. As his life.
Lies for days.
I mean, we definitely deserve to have a discussion about Umar, right? Ooh. Because Umar, in some respects, mirrors the life that my mother lived, right? And not the death of a husband, but just the way that black women have to cope, right? And the way that black women just have to be okay, right?
Yeah.
Because I think the story would have been different if Umar had passed away and Ubaba was doing this, right?
Yeah.
We would have been okay with the things that Ma was doing.
Yeah.
But because it was a woman doing the things that she was doing, we felt a little bit uncomfortable, right?
And we were harsher in our judgments.
And also the idea that I've been thinking a lot about, like, the manifestation of grief in certain people, because I think grief is very personal. And I think that we don't give particularly black women and women the space to perform the grief in the way that they think they want to perform it, right? So Umar's alcohol problems could be a manifestation of the grief. Like, woman, like you said earlier, like, the love between these two people was so powerful. This woman now lives without her husband, and she doesn't know how to do that because she's never had to imagine something like that.
And then she's also forced to just function, right? Like, I often think, had Umar been a white woman, you know? Her employers would have given her a month of work, you know, they would have given her a substantial amount of time off work. There would have been so much more grace in the way that people understood her pain in ways that I don't think extend for black women, right?
But also, you see, so for me, Umar, to be as flawed as she is and to go through that is a lot of black women. So there's that expectation, and we've created ourselves, one, but also... there's no other way of doing it, right? You just have to get up and go, right?
And keep going.
So there's that expectation that we can, anything, you know, we can come out, you know, we can come out singing smoothly, bath water, right? Enoma is like, no, right? Enoma is the opposite, and that's why she's uncomfortable. I mean, you bury your husband today, Saturday, you bury someone, it's Sunday. Monday you're at work.
I mean,
yeah.
It's insane.
I mean, you can't take family responsibility, you take it before.
Yeah.
Because you have to prepare for this funeral.
Post.
And, you know, you have to prepare for this funeral for the people, not necessarily for you, right? For the people. So then on Monday you're back at work because you've run out of days. And you just expected to just move on.
Right. At the same level that
you're at the same level. And so Ma attempts to be that, because that's what's expected. She's got children to feed, right? So she tries to be that, but she struggles and she fails. And that's it, you know. And there's no, and there's nothing for her. There's no place for her to go. And her sisters, they try, but also they, I think in their own ways, they're also like, listen, darling, get up and go. You've got kids, you know, like, because they, you know, she Auntie Betty to try, she moves in with them. She
tries to,
but you know, but eventually it's like, you know, because we do not know how to handle it differently. Like you struggle when somebody is showing their weaknesses. I think us now, having learned and having experienced and having seen that, okay, it's not always gonna be like this. Okay, so you kind of know now. You kind of know how to deal with different things. So okay, so my friend is going through this. Mm-hmm. It's either I can give her time, or I can actually just like go into her space, whether she likes it or not. I'm there because I know she's not okay. Mm-hmm. I think now we're slowly starting to be those kind of people, right? Mm-hmm. But that generation, no,
it was like you're stoic. You keep it going.
You have to keep it.
And
going.
I think it also speaks to just like the structural inequalities. I mean, so Uma doesn't really, they are attempts to help her with her substance problem, you know, but they aren't really amazing rehab centers that she can be taken to. They
and
aren't,
it's far. And it's far, yes. Like it's far,
it's
actually.
Far. It's not practical. It's not practical. There's no emotional support, because who are her children going to be left with while she's going here? Yeah. There's the added element of that taboo that you're now seeking psychological help in a community that expects you to really just get it going, you know? And I also thought that it was an interesting commentary on the way that because we often talk about that we've always had substance problems in our communities, because all of us can relate to that one relative who has a substance use. You know, this person is always going to drink too much and start being problematic. Like, you know that exists. But we haven't always had the means to help those people, you know? So outside of us saying, good to know, we're going to pray for you, the pastor will come, there isn't really much else that we do for those relatives outside of just not understanding why you can't get it together.
Especially when you've tried to help, right? You just like, okay, I'm gonna try and help. So alcoholism is also a very close to my heart. I mean, I do have relatives that have struggled with alcoholism, and my family, my mother, her sister, and others, my uncles, you know, where they've tried to help, but I feel like because there isn't, I don't know what the solution is, right? Because they also get to a point where they're like, we're done, we've tried.
Yes.
And it's like, okay, so what happens there when you're there? Like, okay, you've tried, they've gone to rehab two or three times, but they still just can't get out of it. Like, what is the next step? Mm. And I think those are some of the things that we kind of feel like we have to solve for. Mm. Because it's not that Uma didn't, there wasn't anyone who was there to help her, right? Mm. They were there to help her in the best way that they could, right?
As limited as it was.
Yeah, but it what other support system needs to be in place, you know, for Uma, for example, to then be able to come out okay?
Yeah, so
situations.
For me,
Tiza,
Fikile's husband.
Before we get to Tiza, before we move on from Uma, I think there's interesting questions about forgiveness that come up in this book over and over again, right? So, I mean, Uma has been absent for a large part of these people's childhoods, you know? She's present, but she's not there. They're really forced to raise themselves, you know? But Uma sort of turns her life around, and there's that, I want to say she has a Damascus moment, you know, where she just, the scales fall from her eyes, and she has a turnaround, but Umbuso still is not completely over that, and I mean, I don't know if I was unfair for sitting at home and being like, but Umbuso, she's changed, she's trying, you know, because it really made me think about questions of forgiveness and what we think forgiveness looks like, you know, because this book really asked that of us, you know, like, she really, I mean, Ma had a whole life change in the book. I mean, towards the end of the book, you don't even recognize Ma anymore. It's like, girl, this you, you know? But forgiveness comes up often in this book. And I mean, I guess really what I'm trying to ask is, what were you hoping for with regards to themes of forgiveness in writing this book and in writing your characters to be as flawed as they were?
It's different, like we don't have the same emotional capacity, Right. Ufikile was angry with Ma, but Ufikile got over Ma very quickly. And she just knew, like, okay, this is what I'm dealing with. And Ma, I'm going to put Ma in her box. She just had a way of dealing with Ma. And that was her only coping mechanism with Ma, right? And once she had figured out, okay, Ma is just always going to be there. We're going to take care of this woman, whether we like it or not. But she's nothing to me, like Figile, because Figile, Ma was nothing to Figile at all until towards the very end. But Anele is the one who was always Ma's friend, you know, and she knew Ma more than all the others, more than everyone. And for Umbuso, obviously Umbuso going through what he went through, and I think because of that, being away from the situation also didn't help Umbuso to try and know Uma, to try and really understand. Umbuso was just about himself. Like, this family is a family of losers. I want out of here. Not understanding. And there wasn't ever a time where Uanele and Figile could actually tell Umbuso about Uma. Because they had been exposed and they had been told about the other dead brother. Right, the one before Figile. And they understood Uma, because Uma, when you now look at Ma after that little bit of history, you kind of understand where this woman issues is coming from. You know, before even Ubaba, there was that thing, and no one ever...
No grief counseling.
There was no grief counseling. You lose a baby and... You know, nice.
Life goes on. Maya has gone through a lot.
It's just like, you can have another one, right? Yeah. Which is what we tell women.
And that's what she does, right? She quickly has another one. She quickly has Figile. So, Uma, and then when she has a boy, because Figile leaves, or Anele leaves, and then when she has a boy, she has issues because now it's a boy. You know, and it kind of goes back to that thing of boy children, they say, the boy children, you know, so when your first
the
boy
a
is you know, it messed up Uma in many ways. It messed up Uma, the relationship that she has with Muso, because she never really has that relationship with Umbuso, you know, right? From the beginning, there is something between Uma and Umbuso. Which obviously, with Ubaba being gone, just it's even worse. Yeah, it just escalates. So Umbuso's forgiveness is never gonna be like the two sisters who had time to at least know Uma and spend time with Uma and understand who Uma is. Umbuso, all Umbuso knows is that this is my mother. This is the role that she should have played in my life. And she
didn't play the role, and that's it.
That's it.
Yeah, no context whatsoever.
No.
Yeah.
But also no, like, responsibility on his part as well to say...
To want to know,
but also to say, these are the ways in which I've failed my family, right? Umbuso disappears in the hour that these people need him the most. She's just, how can you pitch up at the end? Sekuphelile. Umbuso really comes back at the end, guys. He's just like, look, it's been great. I'm coming here at the end. You know those relatives who come at the funeral and they're like, oh, come back, Anjan, you know?
Yeah, but I always feel like that's men in general, right? not obviously, some men differently, but this just men are able to detach themselves
from situations. No,
like, easily.
I agree with you.
Easily.
I mean, I hope
how
he doesn't get to me.
How many men are there in a WhatsApp group when somebody dies in a family? Because then there's a WhatsApp group, right? How many men are there in participating? And saying,
I mean,
let's do this. Yes, we can do that.
I think
it was funny because I it's this thing that we do where we contrast it with the men in our lives.
Yeah.
And like for me, my father's always been just like the person that gets things done, you know. And it's a very similar life story. And I'm just like, how? There are people who stay and there are people who can choose to leave, and it's just so nice to be a man because the woman that I know often just stay. It doesn't ever seem like there's a choice for them to divorce themselves.
Yes.
But the men stay because they want to, or they leave because they want to. It's never like they feel the obligation to stay.
So when it was my mom's funeral, right? So my mom's younger brother, not youngest, younger brother. They were very close. So I rock up home and I'm thinking, this is the person who's going to lead the delegation because they were so.
Yeah.
I arrive home. I see his car coming up. I'm speaking on the phone. When I come out, he's gone. I speak to my stepfather. My stepfather says to me, this man said, you know what? I'm not going to be involved in this. I'm very busy. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, when this is how these emotions came up when I was reading the book, right? Because I'm like, but Sklobosaku, like Mbinchi, like she died. And you are like, no, 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 continue because I'm busy.
You know? Yeah. So
let me know what you need.
And it's, but, and I'm saying like.
No, no, also, incoming you know, those kind of things. It's, You want to be there for the big, beautiful moments, you know, the significant things, like the car can't be slaughtered until you arrive. You must decide what happens to the deceased clothes. But when it was the groundwork, you just could not be involved because when...
My sister, Wawana, really, you're being benevolent. Like, I'm saying, you show up on that day and you show up on the day of the funeral and you don't even sit with the family. Like, you are like a guest or guest away, and I'm more funerally.
Yeah.
And people must faff over you. Then after the funeral, you are the one who's coming to be like, oh, I wanted to talk about 1, 2, 3. And you're like, no, maybe you should have talked about 1, 2, 3 when we were planning the funeral, right?
Yeah.
So I definitely agree with you saying that these people live their best life, right?
Yeah.
For me, I want to talk about Tiza, guys.
Yo.
Because Tiza, first and foremost, we need to talk about the complexity of teachers dating younger students, right?
That is really.
Then we need to talk about the transformation of this man, who we know is a philanderer.
Oh, yeah,
we know for a fact that he was a philanderer.
Yeah.
And Fikile stayed. And talking about how women stay in relationships for their families, right?
Yeah.
So when you wrote Tiza, I was just like, I was angry. I was very angry because I was like, Kamuiti, the school teacher. I know the school teacher.
Please, but
that man with that, and also the idea that the whole community turns a blind eye over and over and over again, right? So the family complicity as well. So Madlamini is nice and wonderful, but she was also problematic.
Yes, of course.
Because she knew, she knew. So I mean, I'm contrasting that with, I see my brother coming with this young child, and I'm not even like how long, and then. Like, but no, we are pure.
Yes, yes.
There's not even questions, particularly because there was a first woman who was there already.
Tiza was in a marriage.
The whole family was just, guys, that whole thing was so dysfunctional for me.
Yeah.
And I was just like, so we're just going to let this happen, all of us? And you're watching this in slow motion, right?
Yeah.
And it speaks to the complicity of our communities.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Your own mother, about Kuz, you know, your own mother is not saying to you, actually, my child, you're being problematic. I don't want to see this young girl in our house anymore.
No.
We have Umadlamini, guys.
Because Umadlamini wants a grandson, right?
Sure.
And Ufikile give them that, right? So her priorities are straight on what she's looking.
Hey, Madlamini, Mara.
Listen, so Utiza, I mean, there's so many things that happen in our communities that we let happen.
Mm-hmm. Yo. We watch them as they're happening.
Stand over your corner.
And it's always the girl that is seen to be bad. I mean, Utiza, right? But Ufikile who suffers. Because Figile has to leave school and Figile has to find another school for her to complete her matric. Not Tiza, until obviously something happens later on where this family is like, you know.
Stops right here.
It's exactly.
And also, Figile passes away, right? Dololo Tiza. For like, what, days, Tiza. And then he just rocks up and he's weeping. And like, we must cater for these men who are just like gone, and when they show up, they want to be coddled.
But it also speaks, there was a tweet circulating, and I'm like, the ones with purpose. There's like this man, because you know, men on Twitter just can't know peace.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, when you get sick, your wife will leave you. I'm like, nigga, stop lying.
Stop lying.
And then they did a survey, and someone said, there was some research done and it shows that men are 6 times as likely to leave their sick partner than the other way around.
Oh, really? Oh
my God. And then I was like, the ones with purpose. Because really they get sick. Because when you get married, right, your husband's family takes ownership of you. You know, you are the magodi.
Yes.
You leave with the kids. You must just never look back and never think of your family, you know.
Yes.
When you're healthy and able to do things for them and you can do labor, when you're sick, like Ufikile, you are no longer now
useful
to them. So you're no longer property of that family, and they yeah. almost divorce themselves of you. They just like we are lekhaya, umama kuzokunakekela. And for me, it spoke to that. It spoke to the ways in which men are allowed to absolve themselves of the responsibility of certain things in ways that women are not, right? So people are understanding when a man has a sick wife and then he leaves her with her family because how can he wash his sick wife, you know? But when it's the other way around, that grace does not exist because it's like, this woman left her husband when he was sick. She's such a terrible wife.
But even in instances where you have separated, you know, women will still come back to take care of their sick exes, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, it's insane for me, like, when that happens.
Even at the end, you'll sit on that mattress, this person you haven't spoken to in 2 years, who left you, went to go flourish wherever he was flourishing, and then his family will actually have the whole audacity to call you and be like, Mako, dibuya pe. And
you're just
like,
otherwise,
and you're like, maybe he signed faith that he was with when he died.
But sometimes you as Mako, also you want that mattress.
That is true. Sometimes we take away agency from women, like, why do you do this? They're like, nyafuna.
Nyafuna. Yeah. But it's also because we legitimize certain relations. Like, so when you're the wife, I mean, Figile was a child, but Figile knew that there were things that she needed to do to survive. And I think that Tiza knew that she was vulnerable as well.
Yeah.
You know, and that speaks to the predatory nature of these men. That these men in these schools, you are a teacher, but you know who are the children in your class who don't have families. I get it, we know in our communities, we talk. So you know who doesn't have a mom, who doesn't have a dad, who comes from that shaky family background. And those predatory men often go for those girls because he would never ever have gone for a child who had both parents present, who had all of these support systems. He knew that Fidile was missing that father figure. He knew that her mother had a substance abuse problem, and he capitalized on that.
Imagine a Fidile at a home with groceries. So he also knew that there was an actual need, right?
But
so,
that's exactly what she's saying. Like, he knew where he fits in this family. He knew where to get Figile. And he knew that Figile needed that.
But also,
because the mom also, I felt like Omar needed to have called Figile out, but there was no room for her to also do that, because how does Ma even begin to be a moral authority on anything? Like,
but Omar was gone. Like literally, Uma was gone, and that experience, Uma, I know it. I've seen it. Where you just, you're gone. You wake up in the morning. You don't even go out. You just in that room, and it's dark, and you just want your alcohol, and that's all. You know, that's all. So Ma was gone, and remember, in the early stages, the Agatiza, it's when Uma had just literally fell. It was, and
so she was literally, in a sense, not even
aware, and even if I don't even think that she was aware, because she was just in a perpetual state of drunkenness. She was constantly drunk.
Yes,
and,
mama.
And that was just her.
Just ETOH, ethanol.
I think a handsome character in the book. What is Fikile Saipe? I think Andile for now. I keep on Andile. Andile? Silo. Silo, unale di masele. You know, there's a part where you describe him and you're saying crisp white shirt. And I'm like, a man who takes care of himself. And I think that's also why Fikile was attracted to Silo, right? I think it was the.
I loved Fidile, but that was the one of the few times in the book where I just wanted to reach in and shake Fidile.
To do what?
What was she leaving? He was never there. What was she leaving?
But Silo was still available.
True. Remember Silo and Fidile, they were doing extramarital.
No, but what I'm trying to say is, I think that Silo in many respects was more available than her own husband, and that's what I'm saying, that Silo was more, it's not like she was leaving great for bad. It really wasn't, it was not going to be.
She was leaving nothing for something.
That's what I'm saying. Usuga, you know my church, that's what I'm saying.
But I think also Fikile knew that there was no real tangible future. There was no future with Tsilo.
Was there a future with his end?
It's what she had accepted.
So that leads me to the next part of actually what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, is this thing that I think that in many ways life had broken Fikile so much that... And it speaks to this thing, because we often ask, you know, the questions I was asking of Fikile, the questions you ask of the women in our lives, but why doesn't she leave him?
Yes.
Why doesn't she leave Tsiza? Yeah. She's the one who's selling Tupperware. Oh, Tsiza gana luto. Like, he's not doing anything. He's driving a beat-up old red BMW that spends more time at the panel beater than it spends on the road.
Yes.
And even... I'll never forget that line in the book. And even when it is on the road, I'm kidding. She's not riding in the car.
She's not enjoying the fruits of his labor. Of his labor.
Tsiza is just, wait till Tsiza is flourishing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it really made me, why didn't Fikile leave Tsiza? I really, like, that was the one time I should have said to Fikile. And I guess it does speak to how angry we get with the women in our lives, because we have these beautiful ideas, mlahle chom, mlahle, and you know, women don't always leave their husbands. It's a natural fact. Like, even when she's out earning him, she's the one paying for the kids' school fees. All this man is paying for is DSTV and the petrol in his car.
When he drives it.
She even borrows money from the wives to go see his side bangs. Yeah. And she doesn't leave him.
Yeah. The fact is, she's with him. Right?
And she chose it. But me, I'm happy for...
Together.
I'm happy for Fikile. I'm happy for the encounter that Fikile and Tsilo had. Like, it was just like encounter. But we together. I was there for it.
These nice meals,
lodge. I was like, Fikile, you deserve every bit of this. We're taking this reprieve. You deserve it.
Oh, it was beautiful to write that.
Oh.
Because you just needed to give this. Because I knew that it would not feel authentic if Fikile left Tsiza. For what? For who?
You know, because women don't leave their husbands.
I know, but we can live in hope.
But it wasn't Fikile's story.
Yeah.
It wasn't Fikile's story to leave Tsiza. She had decided on Tsiza and she accepted Tsiza for who Tsiza was. And she knew this, right? When she went in to this. Yes, there was a part in her life where she really needed Tsiza. And maybe there was no love there. But there was love at some point. Between Fikile and Tsiza, and she knew this, and she knew that was her family, and she knew this is what she had been given, and so with Tsilo was just that person that comes,
Mandy,
he was shake daddy, your world,
yes,
and you know they shake your world, and they show you what it could have been, but because he also came with her his own.
But also, you know what I didn't like about Tsilo, right? It's like, why couldn't he have waited for the funeral to pass before he came and wanted to demand what he wanted to demand, right? I just felt like sometimes people, and I suppose this is what you're getting in, right? That there isn't a convenient time for these things. For Tsilo, he was like, hey, Wizikengi, these people may be doing dodgy stuff after this, so let me get in right here and tell them what is actually going down.
I also think that Tsilo was trying to write what he felt with some of his wrongs. I think Tsilo was also cognizant of the fact that he came into Fikile's very messy life and he just made things a little bit messier for her as well, you know? And then Tsilo also, you know, because they're like, this is not gonna work. But he doesn't really overextend himself. He's like, it's not gonna work. Cool. I've come, I've disrupted your life, but it's not gonna work. And I mean, thanks, girl. God bless you. Thanks. And for me, I think it was also just an attempt to write some of that, because it does speak to the fact
redemption.
That men can choose convenient times to show up, you know? Because Fikile, Fikile had said, this is not going to work. I think we must just remove ourselves from the situation. But still at the back of his mind also knew that there are some unfinished things that he needed to do. But men are allowed to, even after 20 years, come and claim their children. You know? So for me, that wasn't about an inconvenient time. That was the reality of what men do. That even... when your child was 21, a man can come and say, but this is my son, this is the heir. Mm. Thanks, mm. I'd like my child back. When the child is 30.
But also there's also that vulnerability that happens just, you know, during that time of confusion when you're planning a funeral. And that's when a lot of things come out.
Yes.
And kiditaba tse ditswang.
Instead of just got in there, it was in a way a way of him, whether he's going to be present in Bafana's life after that or not, that's just something else, right? But it was in a way for him to come, and it was his way of also saying his goodbye in a very twisted kind of way. And he wanted to affirm himself in this family in that particular moment, right? Mm. Yeah, so it's also taking the you always expect it to be the other way around, right? When somebody dies, that the man, you never know how many kids, you know, you just like when my dad passed down in 2010, bless him, I wasn't sure if we were five at home or if maybe we were 10. And you never know until there is a funeral.
No, but that's true.
You don't know. Like, you don't.
That
you,
is
you,
so
you
true.
You don't know. I knew I had three half siblings. I knew that one because I had met them and I had a relationship with them. But I didn't know about the ones that I didn't know of. Right. And you kind of wait. During that period, that week, when you're preparing for a funeral, you're open to everything, to anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That so, people will show up. This is Nwanagage. Like, during that period, because I remember when my aunt's baby daddy basically passed away, right?
Yeah.
On the day of the funeral,
yeah.
On the day of the funeral, we saw Mwana. You know when people enter and you see
and
a child,
you know that
and you're like, that looks like my cousin.
Exactly.
Not even slightly.
Exactly.
So Papa, that is the father.
And we also
never have to explain.
You know, guys, I honestly, I will never forget this because I was working in theatre, and it was cool because it was a whole bunch of black women. So the nursing staff was black, the doctors were black, you know, so everyone is black. Vernac is trending, it's just the vibe. Guys, did this woman not then say to us, you know, they talk about problematic men because men are trash. Then this woman then says to us, you know, the one day she was sitting in her house, sitting, like, you know, the way we're sitting. Guys, it's a Saturday morning. She even knows the time and the date. Saturday morning.
When this happened.
She says this woman walks in with a child whose eyes are shut. The child's eyes are shut. I mean, they're very, like, traditional people, and they believe that they had to be sealed down. The child's eyes are shut. She says the child walked in. The child looked like her younger son. But the way she describes the next events, I was sitting there and I'm like, what?
Yeah,
she said she just got up. These people came in, they greeted her nicely. That woman didn't have to explain who she was. She didn't have to ask any questions. She got up, she opened, she knocked, she called her husband, she said, your people are waiting for you. So now I'm like, what? And everybody's nodding, like, hey, and you guys are making me sick. So I'm just like, and then I'm just like, so did I miss something? Guys, that conversation seemed very normal. She said she got up.
Yes.
She went to the bedroom. She called him. He went to sort out his child. And that was that, right?
Yeah.
And
It's done. What did
and then
do?
They were asking her, so now what happened?
What's gonna happen? Yeah.
Did you? She's like, oh, I'm still married. I'm like, and then, to top it off, she's like, oh, I love that child. He comes over often.
But
she's
also,
like, but my husband is rubbish.
Yes.
But I think also, one thing I like about the ones with purpose, right, is the idea of like, the complexity of black lives, right?
Yes.
But also the redemption of, like, how we as black people navigate our lives. Because sometimes the truth is, nobody leaves.
Yes.
Nobody leaves.
I even love those children. She's BFFs with this child.
Because it's not the child's fault. It's the husband's fault. And, like, sometimes, like, one thing that I'm learning is, like, if Nozi and I are married and I had an affair with you, Alma, and there's a child that arises from the affair, the child has nothing to do with what is happening between the adults. Yeah. So why should we punish the child for something that the parents did? Like, I was being fucky, and now the child must be punished. And I think that's what the woman was getting to be like, lovely child. I want to hold on to.
But this also speaks to the grace that black women are always extending, right?
But like, that's the thing. It's like we take on so much. Like we are conditioned to accept and to find a way of making it work. Okay, so yeah, so this is it. This road is hardly ever there. You know that there's something called get out or look for an alternative, but this one has so many options. You know, you could treat it like this, like this, like this. It's just, for me, I think the ones with purpose, it's different to how I live my life. It's completely different to how I live my life. The decisions that these characters make, the choices that are available for them are different. I like to think that I have a say in how my life is panning out. It's not always 100%, but still. It has allowed me to be, okay, this is not noisy, these are these people, but how do we start to question some of the things? Because it can't be right? It can't be right that we just accept. It can't be right that...
That a teaser is allowed to
flourish for as long as he has flourished, right? And it can't be right that Anele can't make a decision, even now. You know, Anele has been, all her life, she's just been this middle child who has had to choose. You know, all her life, she's like, do I stay, do I go, do I stay, do I go? When she's young, do I stay, do I go, I stay. I'll make it happen. And she makes it happen, she gets education, her brother comes out okay, and even now, she's just like... But it's just questioning, and I don't want to start with the funerals and the amount of work that we put into burying people.
Can you read the last page of the book? Because I think like this brings like a beautiful ending to a wonderful story. For me, like, you know, there's many novels where afterwards I'm like, you know, I still have more questions. I obviously still have more questions. I want to know what happens.
Yeah.
But I think like the way that you ended it like was so like exquisite.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so it's page 270. Today I visit Figile alone. I start with our normal routine, and when I'm done polishing Figile's tombstone, I lay down a blanket and sit at the foot of the grave, placing Caesar's photograph next to me. I ask my sister after her health and if she is happy where she is. I ask her to guide me and to show me the way. Figile was always the wise one, the one who took chances, the one who lived. She tackled everything head on and apologized and corrected mistakes later. For once, I wish I was her. I love Sizwe, but I don't know if love will heal my broken heart and make me trust him again. I start to cry because this is Sizwe staring back at me with his earnest eyes and a full smile. Sizwe, who has always been kind and compassionate and loving, Sizwe, who was not turned off by the turmoil of disease and destruction that plagued my family for years. Sizwe, my daughter's father. I wait and wait and wait for an answer that I know will not come. I am not mad at my sister. A breeze passes and all is silent again.
Just absolutely beautiful, Nosy. Like, just this book, I know I'm going to return to over and over again. Because I think, like, I even said this after I read the book. I was like, we actually deserve a movie. And I know it's going to be a sad movie.
Yeah.
But I think, like, happiness is a four-letter word. I think the ones with purpose should be adapted into form. Because it really tells our stories authentically. In a way that is, as Alma has said earlier, respectful to our people.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not, sometimes we just tell them. But this is very respectful and also sensitive to the issues that we're dealing with. But honest and truthful.
Thank you.
You know, we are the Chicky Natives. We don't rate We don't give you 5 stars, 5 books.
Popcorn.
No. We are in the serious stuff. We're in the serious stuff. Mm-hmm. We give land.
Mm. Okay. You know?
Yeah, no, in Cyril's economy, we cannot be giving people stars and popcorn, you know?
Yeah, you give land. Okay.
When we're starting to buy petrol, I actually saw someone tweet that the other day that the way things are going in this country, petrol is going to start only being sold at home. Like, we're almost there.
Yeah, okay, land. I love
and
land.
So
because I am a gardener of notes. I don't know if you saw my.
Yeah. I saw your gardening coming along beautifully.
Yes. So I'm ready for land. So, where is mine?
Yes. We've never had an ego author being like, where's my land? It's just like,
ready.
My phone now.
Because I've proven myself.
Yes.
You have.
So we've decided to give you, you know, this book was very healing, I think, to a lot of people who read it, because there were questions of forgiveness, there were questions of relationships, there were questions of navigating our own family dynamics, our unconventional family dynamics that you don't see in the movies of two parents and 2.4 children and a cute dog and a double-story house, you know. And it was really that act of telling our stories and telling ourselves and being affirmed by it. So we've decided to give you a beautiful seaside manor in Belito.
Oh,
home province. We're taking it back to the roots.
Yes, I love it.
And so when the land comes, Mozim, you are going to come to the Cheeky Natives.
But to Ufuni title deed to your manor.
Okay.
And we've got you at the land committee.
Guys.
And we will give you your title deed, and you're going to sit in that beautiful Belito manor. And you're going to write even more books, we hope, even more beautiful books about black people in all their complexity, in all of the strange, crazy things that we do, right? That have people across the country and even the world just snapping their fingers. We read Happiness is a Four-Letter Word, and we could all find a friend. Like, you know, you had a friend in each of these characters. You were just like, that's a Tlhokonolo, that's Nelly, that's so-and-so, yes. And then you read the ones with purpose, and it's such a powerful book. It even crosses generations, because that's always my mark of whether a book has been good or not. I then give it to my mom, I give it to somebody else who's a little bit older, and then I'm like, oh, read this book, I think you'll enjoy it. And then I fight with them to get my copies back, but it's fine.
Yeah, me, I just turn it, books leave my house, I'll be like, you can go buy it yourself. Yeah. Which is also, like, I think, a really powerful thing, as someone said on Twitter the other day, they were like, you know, I only read books recommended by the Tlhokonolo. And I thought that was quite a powerful way of, like, this is why I do threads about books when I read them, to encourage people to read the books, right?
Yeah.
And I every time on social media, I'm just like, the ones with purpose, y'all, the ones with purpose.
Yeah, we're going to push ourselves on land.
But before we go, Nosy, thank you for a really fantastic and wonderful, enriching, engaged conversation. I really felt like, you know, we were around a table. We literally are, though. But we were around the table talking about the family like we know them. Next door neighbor, it's Abuma.
Yeah,
you know?
Abuma.
What is next for you?
For me?
I mean, I know it's too early to ask after... the ones with purpose, but are you working on anything currently?
I have to work on something, otherwise it's going to be another 8 years.
Yes.
I have an idea of a collection of short stories. I love short stories. I don't know if I'm good at it or not, but this my next collection is going to be short stories. I already have there's a common thread. So for now, I'm still battling because I have to give it a title. So whenever I start a piece of work, I always give it a title. It changes. The Ones with Purpose was not called The Ones with Purpose initially. It was called No One Else to Invite, which is also a line in the book. So I've given this one, I'm battling whether I'm calling it Joburg is Full of Lonely People, or I'm calling it This Place is Full of Lonely People. But that's just the...
Yeah, already our edges are snatched.
We already know that Nosy's going to press through the walls again.
No, but it's going to be a combination of... So it's different characters, it's short stories, but they're all linked by the theme loneliness.
Mm. Mm. We are ready.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, Nozi, for joining us on the Cheeky Natives. From the Cheeky Natives, we absolutely love your work. We love your first book. We love your second book. And honestly, like, thank you for writing.
Thank you so much. I mean, for the work that you do, it's still a journey that we are all, and I think you're helping tremendously in terms of getting people to read us, to know us, and to read us. Like, I cannot, I mean, you guys know I am in love with everyone who does something in the literary space, really just to help us grow our reader base. Thank you.
Thank you. So thank you for joining us for this week's episode of The Cheeky Natives. We encourage everybody to please go and get The Ones With Purpose and to get Happiness Is a Four-Letter Word. Two very different but equally brilliant books. I think you'll enjoy them on different levels for different things. And you can actually get them at our favorite bookstore.
Rich Books.
And you can use the code CHEEKY and get 10% off. Yeah, so please don't ask the author.
Please don't DM the author. Don't be like, PDF, does anyone have a PDF? Don't do it.
Don't let
what you need to do is support black women who write and buy their books.
Because in which way, if Nozi had not written this book, where were you going to be reading about black funerals or black people experiencing grief in ways that are the full spectrum of emotion? So please don't let the devil use you. Buy the book.
Until next time, cheers.